from MLU headquarters in Philadelphia.
You're going underneath it.
Oh, way out deep!
This is Cleats and Cuffies.
Hit it! Oh, that bad one! Murray!
Everything ultimate, from the field to the boardroom, with Jeff Snyder and Nick Darby.
Hang it up there!
So I just won the staring contest to decide who starts the podcast this week, and I'm going to say it's me. So welcome to Cleats and Cufflinks Championship Game Edition is what I'm going to call this. Can I call it that?
You can call it that.
I mean, it's we'll probably have another one later that will be the Championship Game Edition,
right?
More appropriately. But this is sort of the announcement one. So we're going to get into that in a little bit. We're going to cover some potential disciplinary action involving a player, which should be a thing. We're going to interview James Kalinske, our head referee, and we're going to answer some questions. So it's going to be a good day.
We are.
So how was your weekend, Jeffrey?
The weekend was fantastic. So I attended my first Philadelphia Spinners game, which did you attend your first? No, this wasn't your first. You attended the first one?
No, I didn't attend the first one. I was in Portland. So this may have been my... No, I was at the last one.
Oh, you were
out at Plymouth meeting.
Right. So it's funny being living in Philly and not seeing a Spinners game until week six. So
yeah.
I guess that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Attended the first game and compared heavily with the first game ever that the Spinners held. In terms of entertainment, it was unbelievable. There were... the introduction of Dizzy, their mascot, who had me hysterically laughing.
Dizzy's fantastic.
For those who don't know, I don't know what other mascots are like in other cities, really. But the Philadelphia Fanatic is one of the most enjoyable mascots ever. He's hysterical. It's dynamic, the things he does. He comes out on a four-wheeler.
And for those who don't know, that's the Philadelphia Phillies mascot, the baseball team's mascot.
Yeah, if you don't know that, you just
you should
stop listening. Yeah. I don't want to talk to you. It's incredible. And Dizzy had the feeling of that in an amazing way. He was hysterical.
Yeah, his Michael Jackson dance was fantastic. I don't think you got to see that.
No, I did.
He did it up on a bench,
in front of
some people who... They didn't know what to make of it.
He kept trying to get them to dance to it, and they were just in shock, and it was unbelievable.
Yeah. My daughter talked about Dizzy all the way home from that game.
Yeah, my daughter too.
Yeah, which was great. You know, so appealing to the kids. Gotta like that.
Mascots are for kids, that's for sure. Well, and me.
And you.
So,
and maybe definitely you.
And then they had a Luke Ryan built... I should tell some of the story because it took him many iterations.
Luke Ryan is he wants to be in the special projects division.
Like Google X, right?
Yeah.
Google X is like,
so he's our special projects guy.
He's an MLUX.
Yeah. And he put together, I mean, he did the knot in the face hat, which if you've looked at Ulti photos and seen the knot in the face pictures, those are fantastic.
Those are fantastic.
And then he also put together, I believe, the special project that made you the most happy.
Yeah, it does. So, he was firing T-shirts 50 to 75 feet in the air, and they came raining down into fans' hands. So I was...
cobbled-together PVC pipe. God, if our insurance company is listening right now, just plug your ears for just a minute.
Well, look, we replaced it with process. Something much better, so now it's better. So... the Fly Girls were dancing. We had this drum line of kids from Kappa Kensington.
Oh, yeah. Those guys were great. Mad Beats.
So give a shout out to them. People, I wasn't sure if people would like them. They have an interesting approach. I didn't think they wouldn't like them, but I didn't know if they'd be like a hit or something. Everyone said they loved them, and they're just young kids.
Yep. We had Tom and John both wearing their Chubbies shorts, so the short shorts, out running the tailgate, looking like summer, Chubbies and tank tops. Lots of games to play over there, beer to drink. Like, it just, you know, what I liked about the game is it was interesting because Sweeney Field is a fantastic venue, fantastic field, you know, but it's not a traditional stadium. It's a little more sprawling, a little more open. And I was concerned about how that would feel, but it was great because we activated, you know, the spinner's crew and everybody activated so much of the space that there was stuff going on everywhere. And it felt like a big party festival, kind of picnicky sort of thing.
It felt like a festival. It really did. And, we were on Sweetie Field, and right in the center on the 50-yard line was Sean Sweeney and his wife and his three daughters. And I was excited because here's the man who the field is named after came to the game, and I knew he just didn't know what he was going to see. Like, I think he came out because he wanted to be supportive, but he left because he was a fan, right? He was just, he couldn't have been more psyched.
Yeah, I got to sit with him for a lot of the game, which was nice. Because, you know, usually we're running around, we have tons of stuff to do. But as the years have, as, you know, last year and then the first half of this year's progressed, we've been freed up a little bit more, I think, at game day. And I got to sit with him for a long
time. Why did you say that?
The time?
Why did you say that? You just jinxed it.
Yeah,
great job. Why would you say that?
Fair enough. That was pretty bad. Well, that's all gone now.
Okay.
I got to sit with him for a while. And, you know, this is a guy who runs triathlons, does the Ironman sort of stuff. Like, he's an athlete himself, was a college basketball player, you know. And he's sitting there next to me watching this, and he's just like, hey, he loved the DJ. And
he
mentioned that
J5.
Probably like six times.
Yeah.
But also he said, you know, these are world-class athletes. This is really impressive. And he said stuff like that multiple times. And it's one thing to sit next to people who are more familiar with Ultimate and have been around it. And it's another to sit next to someone who's really a complete stranger to it and to get that kind of just honest, immediate response. It was nice.
Yeah. At one point he said, you know, you guys could make this the fastest growing sport in the world. And I said, well, hate to disappoint you, but that's already been done. Right. This is already.
True.
Hey, right. We're just on the on that train.
We're riding the fastest growing sport in the world train.
Yeah.
So to wherever it can take us.
Yeah. So
we'd like to move a few cars up, you know, just continue moving more and more toward the front car of that train.
Yeah.
And
you go from car to car, there's those change and it's the chains and it's the wiggly section
with
a little
scary. Yeah, make that leap each time you change a car.
And, you know, I don't think anyone's been hurt recently from moving.
And there's some guy up in the front with like one of those long waxed mustaches that's trying to disconnect the engine from the rest of the train.
Right.
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, we keep moving. Keep headed forward. There's a tunnel coming. This metaphor's gotten out of hand.
I don't even know what we're talking about.
We're pulling into Albuquerque.
But the tunnel has a light.
Does it ever.
Yeah, does it ever.
Just a very bright light.
All right. So, we have two big things we're going to discuss. One is the championship game, and the other is disciplinary action handed out, and also an ejection that we're going to talk about in there as well. But let's start with what everybody wants us to talk about, the championship game.
The 2014 MLU championship game. So originally we had this slated to run on July 13th. I believe, right? And it looked like it was going to be at Franklin Field on that date, and we just kind of put that on the schedule. And
we booked the whole thing.
We had it booked. We had it all booked and ready to go. And we had gone prior to booking that and prior to announcing that to PPL Park, which is where the Philadelphia Union plays, the MLS team here in Philly, a 5-year-old stadium, beautiful. And you know, they had been very interested in the event, but seemed to have conflicts with both the 13th weekend and the 19th weekend. And so we said, okay, we'll work on this for next year, and we'll go with Franklin Field this year. And then a few weeks in, we get a call from Mike Scanlon down there, who runs the facility. And he said, you know, the event we had on the 19th is not come to fruition, and that date is open. And it was a pretty short trip to getting to the point where we said, yeah, we need to make this change.
Yeah, I mean, actually, the story is a slightly bit different there, Nicholas.
Oh, give me the real thing, then.
So I think here's what I think happened. We met with the people at the union, all very nice. They did the typical thing. They said, so what is this? They had no idea what we were talking about. We gave them the whole kind of pitch thing. They were interested, and I think they thought the same thing that, you know, Penn Park or whatever else thought, like, all right, well, 200 people are going to come here. So we gave them all this information and we left. And I think what happens is they looked it up and were like, whoa, these guys actually do something. So then they called us up and said, would you want to do this on the 19th? And really worked very, like, worked for us in every way. Like, they turned around from, like, you know, what can we do? What can you do for us to what can we do for you? Which was surprising. And honestly, I think what happened was they realized we're on Comcast, all the YouTube hits, the growth, all this stuff, and they were excited about it. On the 19th, there was supposed to be a Lynyrd Skynyrd
concert. That was, see, I knew there was an event.
But this is after they reached out to us. They said, yeah, they were like, you know what? Lynyrd Skynyrd just tried to book it. Now, all I cared about was that I got Lynyrd Skynyrd tickets. So, but we ended up working out that, you know, our event was there instead. So, and I think Lynyrd Skynyrd decided to come later. So I don't even remember the details.
Yeah, there was some scheduling thing, but... And then I think in the end, you know, we got a question. I got a couple questions when we, you know, because behind the scenes, we've told players and we've told staff that we're making this change so that they can be prepared for it. Even though we're just announcing it today, if you listen to the podcast, the announcement will be coming out today as well.
Right, because this is coming out tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly.
So when is then now?
Then now is Thursday. Then Thursday, now. Yeah. And so if you're listening to it, but we had talked about to the players about it before, and I got a bunch of questions like, are you moving this? You know, because it conflicts with what was the tournament that we conflicted with? The
club Pro tournament? Elite Challenge?
The Pro Elite Challenge.
I get them so confused.
Yeah, I think it's the Pro Elite Challenge. You know, are you moving it because that? What reasons are you moving it for? And I think the big reason is the difference that PPL makes for us is they are, you know, not that we haven't enjoyed working with Franklin Field, it's been great, but PPL is just a different type of venue. And they are more of a stadium partner that is going to work with us and going to help us build an audience for this game because they benefit directly the more people that we have in the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have a marketing team, they have a ticket sales team, PR, and right now we're working on lining up all the things we're going to do together to get as many people out to this stadium as we can. Because they, you know, they have investors on their side and they don't want to look bad because if we do, you know, if we do a bad job, they have to go back and answer questions about why they put a Frisbee game in their stadium.
Yeah.
And you know, I think that it's nice to have someone who's sitting in the same boat with you with their hands on the oars and getting to work. So.
Whoa. I like that. Okay.
I'm trying to add more metaphors to my conversational style to make you happy.
Yeah, that's good. Okay. Yeah. So Nick and I are different people. In case you haven't figured that out. I don't think like Batman and Robin, because those would be two people that kind of had the same goals.
They have a similar set of interests.
Right.
We're, you know, wearing like, very tight clothing and swinging around from rooftops.
We're more like the Wicked Witch of the East and...
And Glinda, the Good Witch of the West?
Is that... Yeah, it's kind of like that. Yeah. Both witches.
Or the house and the witch. Because I sometimes feel like the witch under the house.
Yeah, okay. But... it's funny because, you know, you always are thinking of brand and, you know, presentation. And I'm always thinking of, like, the salesy part of it. I don't know, like, people and all these things, whatever. So let me tell you what got Nick sold in about a quarter of a half second. Which is, Mike Scanlon was talking there and he's like, how do you want the field painted?
Yep,
that was over. So it was like, okay, so we can paint the field? Cool. Like, we can paint the field? I was like, yeah. I was like, and you want your logo in the middle, right? And it was, I'm like, well, Nick sold. All right, we're done here.
Yeah, we can do the logo in the middle. We can do team logos in the end zone. We can do sponsor logo. It's...
The funniest thing he said was, he was like, who could be playing on game day? I said, well, it could be any... Or on championship day. So it could be anybody. I said, you know, if it was like, let's say Portland at... Boston. Like, could we put Portland and Boston in the end zone? He goes, well, we could put it in the end zone, but if it doesn't grow out by the next Philadelphia Union game, you'll be talking to somebody else next year. So it made me laugh a little bit. He was like writing down another city's name in
Yeah, there's Union definitely going to be a little bit of... but I think we have... I think we're fortunate. We have like 2.5 weeks between our event and the next Union game. So they're pretty confident we're going to be able to paint some stuff on that field without... Without being too bad.
So now let's go through some other things. In fact, so here we're going to play Excited You More or Excited Me More. Okay.
Yeah, okay, I like
Who's
this.
Who's more excited? All right. Everybody out there can play. Everybody can play. Okay.
Yeah.
Mike says the field. That one's easy. That's Nick. Second thing he says was, or another thing he says is, you know the boards around the, what do you call those boards?
The video boards video that run boards. Around the bottom of the field and up on the upper deck as well, above the luxury boxes.
He says, well, those are yours. You can use those. Who's more excited?
I mean, I feel like I'm really excited about everything. So, yeah, I was definitely pretty excited about that. Not only can we use those for ourselves on game day, but our championship advertising will be running on those during all of the PPL events from now until that game.
I know. That's cool.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go through this list. I want everybody to hear all the things, the cool things that dealing with a stadium like this too. He says, so here's the seating. What seats do you want to sit in? So I kind of was like, okay, I like that. You're asking me. Yep. All of a sudden. He says, and there's suites. So those are yours. You could sell those.
Yeah, so let me list real quickly the types of seating we're going to have.
Yeah.
We're going to have a basic general admission, which will be, you know, right where you'd expect them to be, on the opposite side from where our cameras are going to be, and right down at field level. Then in the middle...
Let's do ticket price. I want to know the ticket prices.
Ticket prices for the $18.
$18, okay.
And then we'll have some family four-packs and stuff that I don't know.
So if you do a four-pack of any of these tickets together, you generally get 10% off?
I think it's closer to 20%.
Okay, closer to somewhere around
there. We like to do a nice thing for the families.
Okay.
You know? And let's be honest, we're not really going to check if you're related, so... Four packs of tickets are probably a good
idea.
We're not
doing DNA testing?
Paternity testing at the door.
Okay. Like, that actually could draw a lot of people.
We could get a whole other type of crowd there. We'll get Maury Povich out.
I knew it. Maury Povich comes out. The Maury Povich line. All right, anyway.
So, we have general admission, which will go for 18. And then we have reserve seating, which will be right on the 50-yard line. It's a reserve section. So if you have four or five people and you want to make sure you have seats together and you don't want to have to worry about it, this actually is a ticket with a seat number associated with it.
Cool.
And that'll be $26.
Cool.
Gate list price. And then you can upgrade the reserve seating to get access to the club. So PPL has a club that's over under the video board, has a balcony outside, a full bar. We're actually going to stock that with some basic snacks and stuff like that. So for club access, that ups your price to, I'm doing all this out of my head because I didn't open my computer, $45. And that gives you club access throughout the game. Now, club access is limited, so if we sell out of those tickets, they're not going to be available
anymore. That's going to sell out so quick.
I think it will.
Let me tell you some reasons it's going to sell out so quick. Number one, it's fun, and it's pretty cheap, all in all, to get this club. I mean, just think about, if you've been to PPL Park, you know it, and you've realized why it's worth it. If you've been to any other park, it's just like the luxury part of the stadium. Nick and I will be in there, and I'll have my credit card flowing. So I'll be buying all sorts of drinks for people up there, and we'll be having fun. So the club suite is the place to be, and there's only 200 spots, so that is going to... That's going to sell up quick.
Yeah, I hope your wife's not listening to this part of the podcast.
Yeah, she's going to be mad about how much money I spend on drinks for other people. But you know, it's just she'll be in the hospital giving birth. She won't be that mad at me.
Oh, I forgot about that. When is the due date? Is it
July 19th?
Is it exactly the day?
But here's the good news. Here's the good news.
How often do you actually hit the exact day?
Right. No one ever. Come on. I've talked with the child. We're on the same page.
He's whispering into the belly. Look. Yeah.
I think July 4th. I wanted it to be a Beckett baby.
I like that. So. I like that. So I'll correct that. Premium reserved is $42.
$42.
And then these are the seats that I think are really cool. These are the field level seats. So there's a row of seats right behind the video boards, right on the field. And so, you know, the sideline will be probably 10, 15 yards away from that. And since the player benches are on the other side, you have this clean, beautiful line of view right from behind the video boards, right in the stadium. Also gets you access to the club box as long as you buy in early enough. And those are going for $65. And in addition, anybody sitting in those seats, we're going to do a little meet and greet with the players, chance to get autographs, that kind of stuff.
Those seats are incredible.
They're amazing seats.
They're the best seats ever. They're awesome.
We're going to get next to the luxury suites, but I would rather be in those seats. They're amazing.
I got to think about it. For me, if I had a bunch of friends, I'd want to be in a suite. Because the suite's a cool deal.
Yes.
If I had if I could get 20 people together, let's go to a suite and have fun.
Yeah.
If I had three or four or five people, or I was a family member, honestly, I would sit right, because they are literally on the action. And if you've been to a pro field, it's so sweet. Like, the grass looks like it can't be grass.
Oh, I was just standing on this field the other day.
Yeah.
It's stupid. It's phenomenal.
Stupidly perfect.
Yeah.
that explains it. Okay, go to the suite.
So, and then for the suites, we have, these are very cool. So they're, you know, what you would expect from a luxury box suite. They're climate conditioned inside. They have outside seating. They have TVs in there where you can see the replay come up and be able to watch that. They have, you know, a fridge, and they'll do catering in there too, which is sort of an upgrade thing you can do. But to get into the luxury suite, it's, you know, we're selling them as suites in concert with the stadium. So it's $1,500. You get, you know, I think it's 20 tickets.
I thought it was 2,000.
Is the maximum?
It's not 2,000.
It's not 2,000.
It's 1,500.
It's 1,500. If you want to upgrade and add some catering into it, then the cost goes up from there.
Oh, that goes up to about 2,000.
Yeah, right. To do like light catering, you could do that for around 2,000. If you get in early enough, you can also have access to the club. But it is nice to be able to do it all right in this
suite. It's a pretty ridiculous deal. Think about it. Get 20 people together, $100 each, and sit in a club box.
Yeah.
That is awesome. On, you know, mid-July, chilling in a club box.
You get a little air-conditioned club box in mid-July. It was hot last year.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
For me, that's what I would do. Because, I mean, I knew I could get 20 people together. I would get them together, sit in the club box, live it up. I'll certainly come by and buy you some beer, so that's going to help you. But it would just be too cool. That would be my number one thing.
Yeah,
this is a special event.
And they're beautiful boxes.
Beautiful.
Really nice. And this stadium is beautiful. I mean, it's an 18,000-seat stadium, 18,500.
Mm-hmm.
And just there's not a bad view from any seat in the stadium. And I spent a lot of time there the other day, you know, shooting some B-roll and just walking around. And it's just...
It's on the water.
It's stunning. It's right on the water, right under the Commodore Barry Bridge. It's in Chester.
One of the worst places you could be.
Yeah, it's a tough area of town, but the access to the stadium is really good.
It's incredible.
The neighborhood loves the stadium because many of them are employed there. Many of the people who live down there are employed there. And so they love it. So they're very protective of the stadium and its environs. And there's also public transit access. And we'll be running a shuttle from the regional rail stop there.
Yeah. So anybody who's listening from Philadelphia who hasn't been to PPL and maybe was nervous that it's in Chester, it is in a really bad section. They have zero incidents. They take care of it beautifully. You get right off the exit, and it's like a PPL Park exit. I mean, you get off.
Yeah,
it's called Waterfront Exit. You get off. You drive right into the stadium where there's tons of parking. By the way, the parking lot, which is right on the water, and it'll be beautiful. Even it could be downpour rain, it would still be beautiful. Like, it's just a beautiful place. There will be the biggest tailgate party you'll ever imagine. Like, we are just going to have it going. There's going to be games, all sorts of stuff out there. This is what gets me going. Tailgating all day. There's enough fields that we'll be running clinics. We could run games. We can run, like, games. Like, you could play Frisbee. There's fields big enough to come and do some fun stuff. It's just going to be really, really cool.
Yeah, the opportunities pregame are going to be amazing. Cool. So we're going to do let's go through a little pregame list.
Okay.
Because this is an exciting list. We're going to have a hat tournament. Matt Sewell is setting this up.
Nobody better.
Yeah, I mean, who knows tournament management better than Skip? So he's going to be setting up a hat tournament that will run through the day. You know, start in the morning, be done around 3:30 or 4 so that you can come over and get your tailgate on before the game. We'll also have a kids clinic that will be running pregame on the PPL Park field. So you can get your kids out. If you have a ticket to the game, it's an extra $10 for the clinic.
Ooh.
And you can get your kids playing on the field that the guys are going to play on later that night.
Wow.
Pretty amazing. I mean, just walking on the field, I want to be in the clinic. There's something about that grass that just makes you want to play. We'll be doing, obviously, the big tailgate outside, which includes both the parking lots and this giant, as you said, grassy sort of plaza area.
Mm.
There'll also be lots of sponsorship activation around there. So people have, I'm sure, fun games and stuff out from our sponsors. And, you know, we're working on some little mini clinics that we can do outside that I think will be a lot of fun. And yeah, it's so, you know, all that building up to when the gates finally open at 5:30 and people can go in and get into the stands and get ready for what's going to be, I think, an incredible game.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. I mean, we could just keep going down the list. There's a press room, a conference room where we can set up so players, coaches, people, me and you can do interviews. It just is so real. And here's what I want. Do we have more to add? Or are we going to end the segment?
Oh, I mean, we can add more. What else you got?
Well, no. I was just saying, here's what I want to finish with. What I would say is everybody who's listening, everybody we know, let's come to the game. It is going to be wonderful. It's going to be, I mean, I was at the Superdome? Silverdome?
Yeah. So you were at the Silverdome.
Silverdome.
A condemned building in a condemned city.
Really sad.
Really sad. Yeah.
The pictures they show, really, really sad, because it was really bad when I was there, and now it's falling apart. And, you know, I mean, the AUDL first season still is really special to me, and it's a shame that a part of it, you know, I'm going to guess 5 years from now will be worse, right? I mean, let's take a small set. That building sold for $600,000.
Yeah.
You can buy a house a few streets over from where we are right now that is 2,500 square feet for $600,000. They bought a stadium for $600,000. So, and now it's not doing too well. But anyway, so that was a real pro stadium, but it was a condemned at the time. I know that Vancouver and Thunderbird Stadium, not a pro stadium, but they've had 5,000, 6,000 people there. Other than that, I don't know if it's ever been in a pro stadium. You know, I don't think it's ever been in a thing.
Well, Franklin Field.
That's a college stadium.
Is a college stadium. It's a big stadium, but it doesn't, I mean, the difference, like, this is an integrated, active, living, professional stadium that puts 15 to 20,000 people in the stands every other week.
Yeah. And, well, they also have to. They survive from doing this,
and
right?
They run big events. The concessions are great. There's beer, everything from your Bud Light all the way to Victory. There's, you know, good food all around the stadium. We'll have plenty of areas to set up merchandise and to do sponsorship things. And it's just it's a big step beyond anything that we've done to date.
Yeah.
And I think it's a step beyond what's happened for Ultimate for the most part.
Ever. It's going to be awesome.
I mean, it was in the Rose Bowl that one time. Yeah.
No,
what was
that,
1970?
No, that's huge. Yeah. But this is a professional stadium, you know, and you know, a professional event. So I'm pretty excited about it. And I think you're going to have a few announcements in terms of coverage that are going to be pretty exciting about that coming soon.
Yeah.
So all I want is come out. Like, let's just get everybody out there. Let's show everybody in the whole freaking world that we can pack up a stadium and have Ultimate Frisbee be one of the most watched, you know, sports out there. And right now, the leaps we're making, the fact that, you know, we just keep getting asked by another TV station somewhere to air our games. I mean, this could be a coming out party in many ways on the next level. Like, it could really be like, people are like, wow, I never would have thought Ultimate Frisbee could do this. And, you know, we keep surprising people. So I want to surprise people again. So just come out to the game. Bring everybody in now.
Yeah, I'll treat this like a pledge drive. We need your help.
Yeah.
We need your help.
We need your help.
And we'll do, we have amazing group rates. You know, we didn't talk about those, but if you, you know, bring your church group, your work, your school, your Boy Scout troop, your team, and, you know, contact us and we'll put together a package for you that will, we'll treat you very nicely at this game.
We will help anybody get to the game. So you just need to tweet it at Jeff Snader or at Nick Darling. Tell me what you need. We'll get on the horn or through email or whatever, and we'll figure out how to get you here and what we can do, and I'll do whatever I can, right? So, we need you here. We want you here, and it should be a darn good time.
Ah, great time. Couldn't be more excited.
Okay, so now we got to move on to the darker side of sports, unfortunately.
Yeah, let's go to a bit of a downer now, shall we?
You know, so one of the jobs that I have, along with Nick, again, more on the brand side, me and more of just the managing of people side, is reviewing plays that have happened, reviewing conduct of anybody associated with the MLU. And we had an official review of a play. And I want to see if I can pull it up really quick to get the time.
And this isn't the first official review we've had. We did this once or twice last year, I believe.
Oh, we've done many reviews.
Yeah, we've done quite a few reviews, I think.
None of them had ever resulted in a suspension. So,
right, we had one result in a ban that I remember. I'm sure there were some other ones. As you said, I'm not as involved in this part as you are, though.
Yeah, so
certainly.
I just pulled it up. I was a little quiet there pulling up. It's at 2 hours and 22 minutes and 46 seconds. 2 hours, 22 minutes, 46 seconds of week 6 Boston Whitecaps at Philadelphia Spinners. To just give an overview, Alex Peters of the Philadelphia Spinners walks after a timeout, jogs onto the field, and then approaches the Boston Whitecaps huddle. of which you'll then see assistant coach Tom Matthews, head coach Sam Rosenthal, and assistant coach Mike Miller all confront him and tell him to move away. At some point, you'll see head coach Sam Rosenthal put his hand on to Alex Peters and drive him backwards, and then Alex Peters stands his ground and falls over in a flopping motion, flopping way of falling. And you'll see a little bit of heat coming off of some of the players. You also see Josh Marquette of the Boston White Cats will receive a band because he's obviously very upset about it, and I'm guessing used quite a bit of language that was unacceptable because the referee is going to ban him there. No band was given to Alex Peters at that time. No punishment.
Yeah, I mean, I think the referees were on the other side of the huddle. And, you know, you can get a little more on that if you want to read Dusty Rhodes' East Coast Review this week. He talks about this a little bit. I think does a nice job pointing out some of the ways that the way we do timeouts make it difficult for the referees to look for this sort of thing. But, yeah, it was a bizarre situation because he goes to stand next to the huddle, and it looks like the first of the coaches who comes over to him. Who was the first one who came
over?
Tom Matthews. It looks like he just asks him, like, well, it doesn't, nothing physical, nothing. He's just like, what are you doing? Can you leave? That's what it looks like from a distance. And Alex seems to ignore him. And then, yeah, Sam comes over and confronts him. And there's a little shove that Alex makes a meal out of.
Yeah. So let me tell you what's happened from this. So I went and took this play and send it to the Rules Committee, MEU's Rules Committee, which is headed by James Kalinske. James Kalinske was also one of the refs here. So we asked everyone that was not involved with it, you know, sound off, tell me what you think. They all gave their opinions. Here's what we think. Here's what we think of the play. And an easy consensus that the actions were unsportsmanlike, right, what he did. Different thoughts about the penalty and the punishment. Also thoughts about how the coaches acted, what they should or should not have done. And also, all the referees said, you know, this just is another reminder that we can't, you know, there's no break, you know. We have to stay watching the field at all time because silly something can happen. And after taking all of their counsel into account, everything everybody said, I decided that for the action of entering the huddle, coming onto the field to enter the huddle or disrupt the Boston Whitecaps, that Alex Peter would receive a band, right? The equivalent of a yellow card in soccer.
For unsportsmanlike conduct,
for unsportsmanlike conduct. Yeah. There's no doubt that he enters the field with the purpose of disrupting their huddle, right?
Right.
Now, I talked all the time when I coached about how the battle on the field is physical, it's mental, it's spiritual, it's everything. And I have no problems with, you know, mental engagement with your opponent. But there's just a wrong way to do it, and that's the wrong way. You don't, you know, entering their huddle is wrong. Everyone knows it. I don't need to make an explanation for
it. Yeah, I think that, you know, we've talked about this a bit, that we may adjust the rules a little bit on timeouts and just try to make this a little bit of a clearer kind of situation. But there's, you know, there's no doubt that we would expect, and as the league expects, we expect our players to act in a sportsman-like way. And this is a clear case where that, you know, Alex certainly did not.
Again, there's no clear rule against entering a huddle, but also you don't have to write a rule for everything that's obvious.
Right.
And, you know, this one's obvious. And so, for that, he received a band. Afterwards, and again, this is from film review, right? Reviewing, because I did not see this live. From film review, the interactions he has with the coaches, they're heated. They're trying to get him away from the huddle, which I understand. Sam Rosenthal does put his hand on Alex Peters, right? And for that, along with both of the other assistant coaches, Sam Rosenthal, Mike Miller, and Tom Matthews, we issued an official warning.
Right.
Saying, you know, do not touch players. If anything happens, you have to get the referee, but you can't touch a player.
Mm-hmm.
I understand why you did. I don't know that I would have done differently unless it was clear to me what I can and can't do, but you can't touch them. So just don't do it and call over the referee, or it's the referee's job. However, for Alex Peters standing his ground, and as Sam Rosenthal is seemingly, you can judge the force itself, I deemed it as a flop. So an attempt to both upset the coaching staff and the team, and to draw a penalty from the referees. And for that, Alex Peters was given a black card, which is the equivalent of a red card. Giving him, now a black card is worth two bans. So that gives him an equivalent of three bans. And also, regardless, a black card gets you suspended from the game and the next game. So at the moment, Alex Peters is suspended from the next Spinners game. They have a bye this week. So the next Spinners game, which is at New York, I think, he'll be suspended from. However, he does have the right to appeal, which he did. So he put an appeal, which means that we will take the case back to the rules committee. We will nominate three, not just players, but three people from the MLU. One of them will be a coach because a coach was involved. And they will review, along with the rules committee, the whole situation, along with my sentencing, and then determine if they wish to present an alternative punishment for what they think happened there. So they could say, here's what we think should be the punishment instead of what you enacted, and then I will approve or deny that.
Right, and then to avoid any conflict of interest, I believe we're getting players and coaches from the Western Conference, so that there's no possibility of bias in the same way there might be claimed if it was on the East Coast.
Yeah, and we asked all of them, do you feel any certain way about any of the people involved? Because what we want you to do is, we're just really picking them. We're surveying out. We reached out to really random names and said, do you want to be part of this committee? I want you to say, do you feel that Alex should be punished for this? Do you feel that Sam Rosenthal should have been punished worse for this? What do you feel should be the result of this? What's the best action for, your league and the league you play in? So, a big burden on the players, but they need to look at it and determine how they think this should be dealt with and think if my decision was what they want in their league. And if they want something different, frankly, clearly, they have to convince me, along with the rules committee, saying this would be better. This is a better action. Because, if you're going to stop something, stop it cold. And I don't like what happened there. I just think it's just the wrong... I don't want it for fans. I don't want it for young fans, old fans, me, the league, the brand. It's just not necessary. You can win doing other things.
Yeah,
and pointless.
And you're always going to have stuff like this. Like, it's not... it's not that Alex Peters is a bad person. He's caught up in the moment and he's caught up in what's going on. And I don't know what he was thinking. I don't understand it. But at the same time, stuff like this happens.
Oh, he's not a bad person. Alex is a really, really good kid.
Yeah.
However,
and a great player.
I actually captained him for years. So, yeah. But the end of my career was the beginning of his, and captained him. And he's different. He focuses on rules. Like, he always knew the rules inside and out. He loves to push the boundaries.
Right.
He's, famous for, at least I've heard, for running out of bounds on a pole and then coming back in bounds in club, right? So, he pushes the boundary of what you can and can't do to use it to his advantage. Again, I don't have necessarily a problem with that, pushing the boundaries, but this to me isn't pushing a boundary. This was just clearly crossing one.
Well, right? It's pushing a boundary too far. And, that's kind of the difference in what we're doing compared to what's happened, I think, over the years in club, is that there are definitive consequences when you cross those boundaries, and there are consequences that last, that affect your next game and your next thing that you do. It's an ongoing narrative and you're part of it. So if you get caught up in the game in the wrong way and you do something that is damaging to the game, to other players' experience, to the fan experience, whatever it may be, there's a consequence for those actions. And that's the message that has to be sent from the league. And it's the message that, gets carried through from the player organization. And I'll be interested to see how the players come back on this.
Me too. But you bring up a point which is worth talking about just for a little bit, was have you ever, you know, my time with Club Ultimate, I never saw anyone get suspended.
No, does it happen? Because it didn't when I played, I don't think. Because we had, I mean, I remember playing Ring at Nationals one year, and one of their players punched one of our players, and then we settled everybody down, and we went back on the field, and we played. And he played the rest of the tournament, as far as I know. You know, just I've seen plenty of those type of incidents that that just, you know, it's not that there isn't a pot, like, it gets worked out, kind of, but it seems like in the long run, the consequences for the actions will settle that stuff down before it happens, potentially.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't, maybe they don't do suspensions. I mean, you know, one of my most frustrating stories was, I'm going to forget his name right now, but we were in sectionals with Amp. We were the number one seed, so you play the number 16 seed.
Mm-hmm.
And a kid who was a pretty good athlete kept laying out, and we kept telling him to stop. Stop laying out, because you're going to hurt somebody. And he kept laying out, and we couldn't stop him, right? There was no course of action to stop him, and he ended up, man, what is his name?
He kept laying out into people, right?
Into people, yeah. Right? And he finally lays out and blows out one of our guys, his knee. And his name's going to pop in my head in a second. But he blows out his knee. And that was the last time that guy played Ultimate. And it was really frustrating to me because I had nothing to stop him. Like, stopped it. Like, if he should have been suspended, it's like, you can't just do this stuff. And I remember he laid out into Brian Felt, who's a big, strong guy. And Brian was really upset about it. Right, and I actually think if I could, Brian Felt can tell me, I think he spikes the disc on. I think he threw the disc down at him, right, and hit him with it. So it's all sorts of bad offenses,
which,
right?
Which that is bad.
Right, there's all things that were bad.
Yeah.
You know? And so there's heat, and then, you know, three plays later he blows out the guy's ACL. But, but, you know, a suspension there, I wish there was there. So this is one of those things where, look, in our league, there's consequences, you know?
It's also what I like about the ban system or the card system in soccer is it's an opportunity to calm a player down, too. Because mm-hmm. we had an incident with the laying out into somebody that was pretty rough. Who was it who laid out? Jack Casey.
Yeah. I forget when it is in the thing, but you'll see a poor choice. He made a poor choice and completely clobbers Matt Rebholz.
Left his feet. Rebholz was coming up the line, and he just comes right into him. And, you know, he gets a ban for that. Now he has to be thinking about what he does for the rest of the game because he doesn't want to get suspended.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just think it's a useful mechanism for calming a game down. And it obviously fits in well with our game. But in general, that kind of protection for the player's safety and, you know, protection for the integrity of the game, I love. I think it's really important.
Yeah, I think it's great too. And you'll actually see there's another play where Seth Reinhart peels off on a poach, and yep. he hits Patrick Deviney. It does not get a band, but the you know, there was a review after the play too, and they decided to give a band, to assign a band to Seth Reinhart.
Oh, retroactively
assign yep. one because it was a dangerous play.
Yeah. Again, this is not people being bad people or not them intent. They're not intentionally trying to hurt anybody,
no.
But they still need to have it addressed to calm them down, to say, you need to put more thought into your decisions.
Yeah.
And here's your warning about that. Yeah. And if you can't calm yourself down and you can't change your thought process, then we're going to have to remove you from the game because it's dangerous.
Yeah. And Morgan Hibbert was actually ejected this weekend too. He got a band. Which you can give your opinion on it. Anyone can go watch it. A disc goes up, and he makes a layout or a bid on it. I think we'll see his appeal process on it if he wants to do that. Because everyone has to remember too that it's really hard to give context to a ban sometimes. If someone's been dangerous the whole game, it could be the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah, you can get a ban for a pretty small thing. You can get a ban for fouling on the mark. If you've been doing it
the entire game.
Yeah.
So, I still have yet to review all of the facts in that case. But, you know, he got a band. And it's what happens. It's our course. So we'll keep you posted on what happens. I certainly want you to tell me what you think should happen. 2 hours, 22 minutes, 46 seconds into the Philadelphia Spinners versus Boston Whitecaps game. Tell us what you think happened. At Cleats Cufflinks. You let us know.
No.
All right. Now, that moves into this perfectly. We're going to have an interview, a Skype interview, right? yeah. with James Kalinske, head ref of the MLU.
Yeah, I'm going to step aside and I'm going to do this interview a little bit later today. So you're not going to be around. You're just going to have to listen to me talk to James Kalinske.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's not as entertaining. Terrible. We all know that. But yeah, stay tuned.
All right. So I'm here with James Kalinske, head referee of the MLU. We have, you know, through the advent of time warps and things like that, gotten rid of Jeff. So it's just James and I here in the studio talking a little bit. Actually, James is at his house talking to him. But welcome, James. Welcome to Cleats and Cufflinks.
Hey, thanks for having me in.
So, you know, we brought you on. We wanted to talk a little bit, give people a little bit of an insight into sort of what goes on with refereeing in the league, what your job is. So why don't you give us a little breakdown of generally what you see as your jobs and responsibilities with the MLU as head ref?
Well, my job's kind of peppered with a little bit of everything. Right now, the MLU functions by having 8 coordinating officials, one at each of the major cities where there's a team located. And my job is to make sure that each of those coordinating officials are interacting with each other so that we have a little bit of unity throughout the league as to rule interpretations, positionings, the mechanics, and in general, everything that referees do, so that when teams travel from city to city, they get a similar experience from the referees.
Excellent. So, all right, let's say, you know, this is all the technical stuff, but what would you say for the referees on the field? Like, what do you think is the biggest challenge? What's the hardest thing to call? What's the hardest part of the game to pay attention to?
Well, the hardest part is that there's 14 players on the field and there's only 5 officials. Last year there were only 4, but this year we upped it to 5 to kind of help out with that. But it's pretty tough to monitor the entirety of the field, the downfield, especially with the players in this league. They move so quickly. They're at a fast pace. They're changing roles. They're not just standing down next to the disc. If they're a handler, they're cycling up into the field. So I would say that one of the toughest things is making sure that the referees are on the same page as to who's monitoring which players and when, so that we're not doubling up and we're not losing anything.
So there's a pretty good a pretty good fitness level involved in this too, I would imagine. We have a certain fitness requirement for our refs.
Well, the players get to sub off after each point. The 5 officials are on there for all 4 quarters.
That's true. That's true. And even in timeouts, you have to pay attention, as we learned a little bit this past week, huh?
Yeah, that was kind of an unfortunate circumstance of just, you know, the officials, we all gathered in the spot that was nearest the official that we all wanted to talk to about a play, so we just kind of gathered over there on the far sideline, and turns out we should have been in between the teams a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this a little bit earlier in the show, this whole issue of Alex Peters' actions at the game and getting involved in the huddle and how that played out. Do you think that... how do you feel about the review process that goes on with these things? Obviously, he's appealed the ruling, and now we have a review process taking place. How do you feel that's functioning in the league right now?
Well, I think it's good that it's an open process, and it's a working mechanism. It's not a straight-up one person decides you get a ban for your actions, and that's, you know, the end-all, be-all. That even if the ban was given out during the game and it wasn't a retroactive ban, there would still be an appeal process. And any ban can be appealed by any player, you know, if they give a good reasoning, and it's going to be done by peers. It's not just, you know, the ups in the league making a decision. There, you know, there's good discussion about it.
Excellent. And I think going forward, like, what would you want to improve about the experience for our refs, the experience between the refs and players? Like, what are you looking for as we continue building this league, as we continue moving into, well, dare I say, 2015 next?
Yeah, well, I think that what's really good, especially on the coast where the teams are very close together, the referees are able to travel in between crews a lot. I know that some of the New York referees end up in Philly. Last weekend in Philadelphia, we had a New York referee. I'm personally from New Jersey. We had some referees from Philadelphia, and we even had a D.C. ref in. So just getting everybody in, to meeting each other and discussing with each other and getting on the same page, not just in terms of these are the things you have to do them, but actually discussing them and interacting and physically being there to experience that will help make sure that everything overall is just a uniform experience.
You're going to build a, maybe build a little consistency is sort of the message.
Yeah, consistency is pretty tough, you know, especially considering, you know, each city has their own referees. So, you know, it's not too often that a San Francisco referee is going to be on the East Coast to officiate with us, but, you know, all the referees watch each other's games and we all give each other feedback on things and say, well, why did you call it that way? Or, oh, you forgot to mark off the yards in this fashion. You know, your hand signal was wrong here. You know, there's a lot of interaction and that's really good. And, you know, as the league grows and expands and we have more and more referees, it's going to be really important to keep that communication open.
Excellent. Okay. So, you know, we don't have a lot of time here. We're going to keep moving, but the last thing is, we talked earlier on the show, championship game, moving to PPL Park, bigger stage, you know, more cameras on it, more fan eyeballs on it, I hope. How are you feeling about putting your crew together for that game? How exciting is it to kind of head out onto that big field in that big stadium?
Oh, man, I can't wait. I've never been to the field myself, but, you know, last year being at Franklin Field was such a great experience. And the very first time I ever officiated a game in Philadelphia, there was about 1,800 fans cheering on the Spinners. And I'll never forget the feeling of Trey Katzenbach has a disc and gets knocked over when he's on offense throwing the disc. And I called a pick because the defender ran into him because he was picked. And I'll never forget what it feels like to be booed by 1,800 people. So I'm excited to see what happens. You know, I hope to hear some cheers and some boos, and I hope there's a whole lot of people there. But it should be a great experience. Grass is going to be nice.
It will be nice. Nice grass turf. I was walking on it the other day. It's beautiful. Well, all right, James, thank you for coming. I appreciate you taking the time with me. It's people at home don't know this because they're hearing this in continuity, but it's like 10:45 at night and we're having this Skype interview. But we're going to, you know, I think it's good that people get a little bit of insight into the inner workings of the referee system. I know we're going to have you on again because there's obviously plenty more to talk about. And I'd like to particularly involve you in these discussions when we have rulings and sort of higher profile stuff like we had this week. So we'll get into it a little more next time, but thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Okay, so we want to end this show with just some questions that we've gotten, okay, from the @ Cleats Cufflinks. Good Hello. Interview by James Kalinske that I haven't heard yet, but I'm going to say that.
I'm going to assume it's good. Yeah.
Okay, here's what I got. You know, pretty much all of them are about being ejected or banned. So I got a good one. I got to give it to you. Glenn Poole.
Did he finally do it?
Okay. What's the biggest secret innovation you have planned for Major League Ultimate in 2015? I think he did it.
So he's been working. For people who are new to the podcast, in the very, I think it was the first episode, we said that if you can ask a question that we can't answer, we will give you
cufflinks.
And Glenn Poole has been trying to do this since and has come. He's done it. You know, he's made a good effort. But
I mean,
this
his first question was, "What was his least favorite athlete in the MLU?" And I got him. On
yeah, that was
it. Was zinger.
But I think that he's got us here, and he's got us here in a semantic.
Right, because if
trick.
We don't answer it,
then we owe him cufflinks. If we do answer it,
it's not
a secret, and thus we're not answering the question.
Hmm.
So well, I think we have to give him the cufflinks.
All right, Glenn Poole, you've won cufflinks from 2019. So you've won a 2019. Now you won them fair and square. Congratulations! We'll get you some cufflinks. MLU. If you don't have a French collared shirt though, or
French cuff shirt. We don't provide the French cuff shirt for the cufflinks.
Yeah. First of all, I'll be disappointed. You better have a shirt that warrants such a cufflink.
Oh, yes. In fact, I'm going to want to see some proof of a French cuff shirt before I send cufflinks.
Yes, we need a POC.
If you could tweet us a picture of your French cuff shirt sans cufflinks, then we will live up to our half of the bargain.
I like it. But congratulations once again on a good question. Answering the # unanswerable question.
Unanswerable question.
Now, I think we probably are pretty light on time. So, reach out to us. Tell us who you want us to interview. Tell us what you want us to talk about. We got lots of goodies, though. And we're certainly going to come out with, I think, next week, if we're able to, a couple of yummy announcements.
There's going to be some good stuff. And get out there. Buy yourself some championship game tickets. Spread the word. You know, if you have an idea for spreading the word that you want to take on, let us know what it is. We love people who want to step up and do some cool things. And yeah, get a hold of us at Cleats Cufflinks or Cleats and Cufflinks at MLUltimate.com or, of course, at Nick Darling and at Jeff Snader.
Until then.
Until then.
Nicholas.
Jeffrey.